"What's that?" Sabrina asked, staring at the building with an entrance shaped like a giant gaping shark's mouth. A young family stood posing inside the mouth while the dad snapped their picture. "That's something fishy. It's a souvenir shop. They sell everything from saltwater taffy and postcards to preserved baby sharks in a tube." Sabrina made a face.
"Ew."
"Yes, ew to that. But they have a lot of fun things in there. Tomorrow I'll take you in and you can check it out. In fact, we'll do a tour of the town. How's that sound?" Sabrina nodded.
"Good."
"Good? That was good." Jenna smiled. More motels began to appear. A Quality Inn, a Best Western with a restaurant sandwich between, and a beautiful old Victorian B&B with a long front porch, complete with wicker chairs for lounging. It was painted white with blue trim. One word summed it up. Charming. Sabrina's eyes lit up at the sight of it.
"Is that our motel?"
"No, that's the Oyster Inn. It's gorgeous inside. I remember eating in their restaurant for Graham's birthday one year when we were all down visiting. I was 10, and it was the first time I'd been in such a fancy place. Linens on the tables, fine crystal, my first ever crab cocktail. From what I hear, the restaurant's still as nice. We'll have to go there and order you a crab cocktail."
"Does our motel have a restaurant?" Sabrina asked.
"No, but there's one next to it, and the motel has a pool." Sabrina smiled and took off a big bite of her ice cream. Ice cream, pizza, and a pool. Jenna had scored some major points. The two cars in front of them began to slow down.
"Why is everybody stopping?" Sabrina asked.
"Look," Jenna said, pointing. Farther ahead, a deer and her fawn strolled across the road. A woman in the car ahead of them leaned out and snapped a picture with her phone.
"Wow,"
Sabrina breathed, impressed. Mama and baby made it to the other side, and traffic, all three cars, began to move again.
"Pretty cool, huh?"
Jenna said, and Sabrina nodded.
"Good."
Another favorable impression made. Until they got to the end of Motel Row and finally came to the Driftwood Inn. Charming, it was not. What had happened to it? If not for the sign hanging askew and blowing in the wind, Jenna would have thought she was at the wrong address. The roof covering the long string of 20 rooms was missing shingles, and one of the rooms had a board where there should have been a window. Once the place had been the color of a cloudless sky. Now it was faded, and the paint was peeling, and a blackish mold was forming colonies on the walls of the motel. As for the promised pool, she didn't dare look. The chain-link fence around it was bent and sad. A couple of ancient lounge chairs sat on the cement deck. One was tipped over. If there was water in that pool, it was probably contaminated. A lone car, a gas hog from another era, brave enough to traverse the potholes in the parking lot, was camped at an end unit. Sabrina looked around them in horror.
"This place is a dump."
It was, and the small two-story gabled house next to it, Aunt Edie's home, wasn't in much better shape. Its paint, also once a cheery blue, was as faded and chipped as the motel's. The long porch and its railing needed painting, and a couple of the steps were leaning at a slant like something in a carnival funhouse. The trees and bushes had been taken over by some kind of hanging moss. The lace curtains at the windows and the big pot of flowers on the porch made a vain attempt to dress up the place. Sabrina had followed Jenna's gaze.
"That's where we're gonna live?"
Jenna's right eye twitched.
"Don't worry. We'll fix it up."
Blink, blink. Too young for a vote of confidence, Sabrina said,
"I want to go home."
"Hey now, where's your sense of adventure?" Sabrina looked at her as if she were insane.
"You're kidding, right?"
"At least it's got a restaurant next door." "All right, not really a restaurant. The seafood shack, situated on the other side of the parking lot, was barely big enough to support the giant wooden razor clam perched on its roof. But it was a novelty. People liked novelties, and having a place to eat right next to your motel was a bonus. Guests could just walk over and grab something. Not that there was anyone walking across the parking lot or anyone inside the seafood shack grabbing. Well, lunch hour was past, so that was hardly surprising. The gentle rain was becoming less gentle, pouring down in an angry patter. "Come on," Jenna said. "Let's go see Aunt Edie, and don't say anything rude about the motel," she added as they walked up the front steps. "Okay?"
"I wasn't going to," Sabrina said irritably. "You taught me better than that."
The doorbell didn't appear to work, so Jenna knocked on the door. She heard the chattering of a bird and then muffled footsteps.
"I'm coming,"
called a thready little old lady voice.
"When?"
Sabrina muttered. It felt like forever standing on the porch with the rain soaking their sweaters and hair.
"You don't move so fast when you get to be Aunt Edie's age," said Jenna.
She'd barely finished speaking when the door opened. There stood her great aunt. She was wearing jeans and tennis shoes and a sweatshirt with a seahorse on it that had Moonlight Harbor scrawled across it. Her hair was the same tightly permed cherry red it had always been, and she was still wearing her usual coral lipstick on lips that had grown thin with age. Silver earrings shaped like sand dollars hung from her ears, and a collection of rings decorated her hands. To top off the ensemble, a pair of red reading glasses hung from a chain around her neck.
"Jenna!"
She held her arms wide, and Jenna bent to step into her embrace. Aunt Edie had always been petite, but it seemed she'd shrunk since Jenna last saw her. She still smelled like white shoulders, her favorite perfume. Aunt Edie turned her loose and smiled at Sabrina.
"And this must be your lovely daughter. Sabrina, I'm so happy to meet you at last."
She held out her arms, giving Sabrina no polite option but to also accept a hug, which, well-mannered child that she was, she did.
"I can't tell you how much it means to have you both coming here to live with me."
"We're not staying for sure," Sabrina said as she pulled back and cast a look at her mother that begged her not to make any wild promises. Aunt Edie's brows pinched together.
"You're not?"
"Don't worry, Aunt Edie, we're here to stay," Jenna said and shot Sabrina a warning look. The way her eye was twitching, she hoped Sabrina didn't think she was winking at her. The look she received in return spoke volumes about parental betrayal, even though Jenna had not made any promises about returning to Seattle. That option was all in her daughter's mind.
"Well, come on in. I made oatmeal cookies just this morning, and I've got pink lemonade."
Her aunt's oatmeal cookies had been a childhood favorite.
"Thanks," Jenna said. "It's not a very nice day," Aunt Edie observed as she led the way into the living room, "which is a shame, because it's so pretty here when the sun's shining. June's a little iffy weather-wise," she told Sabrina, "but in July, it's heaven."
Sabrina was polite enough to nod, but she didn't look all that thrilled to see heaven in July. The living room was almost as badly in need of paint as the outside of the house, but it was cozy, with its furniture arranged for conversation, the old wood stove in the corner ready to take off the chill on a winter's day. Jenna remembered the braided throw rug on the hardwood floor, and there was the same old brown sofa sleeper bed that Cousin Winston had often occupied when there was an overload of girls in the house. One of Aunt Edie's hand-crocheted afghans was draped over the back of it. She still had the little stuffed chair upholstered with the sand dollar print fabric that Jenna had always favored. And there sat Aunt Edie's antique rocking chair and Uncle Ralph's old recliner. Seeing the recliner empty put a lump in Jenna's throat. As they entered the room, a parrot with plumage in varying shades of green, perched inside a giant cage in the corner, fluttered his wings and greeted them.
"No solicitors!"
"Now, Roger, behave yourself," Aunt Edie scolded.
"Roger, behave yourself," echoed the bird,
who'd obviously heard that a few times. Sabrina walked over to the cage to get a better look, and Jenna followed her. The parrot was walking back and forth on his perch now, excited over having an audience.
"Are you a pretty bird?" Jenna asked him.
"Roger's a pretty bird," he said. "Give me a whiskey," he added.
That had always made Jenna giggle. In her present mood, Sabrina wasn't about to even smile.
"Weird," she said.
Uncle Ralph was a bad influence, said Aunt Edie. You girls sit down and make yourselves at home, and I'll fetch the cookies. Would you like milk or lemonade, dear? She asked Sabrina. Milk, please. At last her daughter was managing to remain polite. Jenna smiled at her encouragingly. Sabrina didn't smile back. And Jenna? Cookies and milk sounds great. All right, then. Aunt Edie nodded and started for the kitchen. Do you want some help? Jenna asked. No, no, I can manage, she said and disappeared. Isn't she sweet? Jenna said to her daughter. Sabrina's polite mask fell away. Why did you tell her we're staying? We're not for sure staying. Sweetie, we don't have a house anymore, remember? You said we didn't have to stay if I didn't like it, Sabrina said, eyes flashing. You lied to me. No, I didn't. I said give it a chance. Well, I have. No, you haven't. We just got here. I don't want to be here, Sabrina said, her voice rising. Aunt Edie picked that moment to return with a tray bearing a plate of cookies and two glasses of milk. Her steps faltered, and for a moment, Jenna thought she was going to drop everything. She rushed over to her aunt and took the tray. Here, let me help you with that. Oh, thank you, dear, Aunt Edie said, looking flustered. If only she didn't still have such good hearing. Sabrina clenched her jaw and plopped onto the sand dollar chair, and Jenna joined Aunt Edie on the couch. Two against one. The atmosphere felt charged as if there was about to be a squall of epic proportions right there in the living room. Aunt Edie cleared her throat and picked up the plate, offering it to Sabrina. Sabrina shook her head. No thanks. We just had ice cream, Jenna said. Oh. But I'd still love a cookie, Jenna hurried to say. Your oatmeal cookies are the best. That brought out a smile. You always did like them. Jenna helped herself to one and took a bite. Aunt Edie hadn't lost her touch. It's as good as I remember. And you're just as sweet as I remember. Not for the first time, Jenna found herself wishing she'd made the time to come down and see Aunt Edie. If only she'd come to visit when Sabrina was younger, maybe her girl would have fallen in love with the place, too. Maybe then she'd have been happy to be there. I'm sorry I didn't get here for Uncle Ralph's funeral, Jenna said. You wrote a lovely note, and you sent those beautiful flowers. Anyway, I know you've been busy dealing with... She cleared her throat. Things? Like crummy husbands. Jenna nodded and took another bite of cookie, and Jolly Roger informed them all that he was a pretty bird. Give me a whiskey. Pretty bird. Pretty bird. Roger's a pretty bird. Ralph? Ralph, where are you? Roger was certainly contributing more to the conversation than Sabrina. Jenna sighed inwardly. This house felt like a haven to her, but Sabrina was looking at it like it was prison. Jenna and her aunt visited a few more minutes, while Sabrina sat in her chair and brooded. Maybe you'd like to see your rooms, Aunt Edie suggested. Good idea, Jenna said. Want to see your room? She asked her daughter, keeping her voice gentle and coaxing. Sabrina bit her lip and nodded. She was close to tears. Now, so was Jenna. I have you in the blue room, and I thought Sabrina might enjoy being in the doll room, Aunt Edie said, and started to get up. Don't bother to get up, Jenna told her. We can find our way. Aunt Edie nodded and subsided back against the couch cushions. Jenna led the way upstairs, bracing herself for what would come once they were out of earshot. Sabrina didn't wait until they were in her room. She started in as soon as they reached the landing. I don't see why we have to be here. We have to be here because right now we need to be here. Sweetie, Aunt Edie is letting us stay rent-free. That's going to really help with the budget, and right now I need help with the budget. I'm doing what I think is best for us. Honestly, how many more times would they have this conversation? Daddy's paying child support. We can live on that. Child support? With what? Who told you that? Sabrina blinked. He is, isn't he?
Of course he wasn't. He was still just a child in a big body. Jenna wanted to scream. No, he's not paying anything. I'm supporting him and his new girlfriend while he pretends to train for life in the real world. I'm carrying the load and he's sitting around making statues out of old shoes. This was what happened when you didn't listen to your mother and your grandmother. This was what happened when you fell stupidly, besottedly in love with an illusion masquerading as a man. Now she had to foot the bill while he supposedly trained for a new job. She reined in her temper. Hard. No, he's not. The words came out like chipped rock.
But he said...
Sabrina stopped mid-sentence, seeing the expression on Jenna's face. What did he say?
He said he gave up a lot for us.
Oh, yes. He'd have been famous by then if it hadn't been for the burden of caring for a wife and child. Damien Pettit, thwarted genius. He did, Jenna said. And he loves you. Not as much as he loved himself. There was no one he loved as much as he loved himself. No, wait. Maybe that wasn't fair. He loved art. He lived it and breathed it. Damien hadn't been cut out for a normal life. Maybe this mess was as much Jenna's fault for not seeing that as it was Damien's for being who he was. You know your dad's a great artist, she said. But he's not famous yet, and he's struggling. How cliche, but it was the best she could do. Right now, we're all struggling, but things are going to get better. She opened the door to the room that would be her daughter's. Sabrina looked in and took a step back.
It's creepy.
Maybe it was a little if you weren't into dolls. They were everywhere, crowded into a curio cabinet, lolling on the bed, having a tea party in the window seat. Even the antique dresser hadn't escaped. A clown doll was making himself at home there. The room housed every imaginable type of doll. Baby dolls, porcelain-costumed ones, Barbies, even a 3-foot-high little girl from the 50s that had fascinated Jenna when she was young. That one was standing in the corner, ready to play.
"Am I supposed to be able to sleep in here?" Sabrina asked, eyeing the collection as if they were all about to come to life.
That was what happened when you watched too many horror movies. "I'll take this room. You can have the blue room," Jenna said, and led her to the next room. It was well-named and sweet, with its blue walls and the blue bedspread with a seashell pattern stitched into it, covering an antique iron double bed that had been painted cream. White sheer curtains at the window framed a mesmerizing view of the Pacific Ocean, its giant swells frothing their way to the beach. Sabrina walked to the window and looked out silently. No comment on the room or the view. Jenna came and stood behind her and put her hands on her shoulders. Sabrina covered her face.
"If you'd been nicer to Daddy, he'd have stayed and we wouldn't be here."
There it was again, the familiar chorus. "Sabrina, sometimes things don't work out between people and it has nothing to do with anyone being nice."
"Go away!"
Sabrina cried and began to sob. Jenna sighed and obliged. Back in the living room, Jolly Roger greeted her.
"Give me whiskey! Give me whiskey!"
I could use one, too. Did Aunt Edie know how to make mojitos? This will work, Jenna told herself sternly. Aunt Edie needed her help. Sabrina needed her to be wise and carve out a secure future for her. And darn it all, she was going to do both. Chapter 4. To do. Unpack. Return trailer. Go to bed early and recover. Aunt Edie looked at Jenna with concern when she came back into the living room.
"Your daughter's not happy with our arrangement."
There was an understatement. "Right now, my daughter's not happy about anything," Jenna said, and fell onto the couch. Aunt Edie twisted the large agate ring on her middle finger.
"I'd hoped this would help you. I thought we'd all be so happy."
Her words fell away and she gave the ring another twist. Jenna reached out to hold her aunt's hand.
We will be. She wasn't sure who she was trying to convince, Aunt Edie or herself. It's just going to take her a little time to adjust. Aunt Edie nodded and made a brave attempt at a smile. The divorce has been hard on her. Even though her dad's never been much of a father, he's all she's got. Moving away, well, that just makes it easier for him to ignore her and for her to blame me.
It's never easy to admit when your father's no better than seagull droppings.
Good old Aunt Edie. She always did have a way with words.
Everyone tried to warn me. I was just so... in love, Aunt Edie finished.
Of course you were, and I remember when you brought him to visit. He was a handsome young man with all that straight dark hair and that Roman nose, that perfect physique. He was a beautiful work of art.
Only on the outside, Jenna said, and helped herself to another cookie.
We all make mistakes, dear.
You didn't. Uncle Ralph was great. Aunt Edie took a cookie and inspected it.
Well, your Uncle Ralph wasn't the first.
Jenna stared at her in astonishment.
He wasn't? No. My first love was a banker.
A banker? Jenna repeated, trying to process this new information. It was hard to think of her free-spirited aunt married to a staid businessman.
Nobody ever told me.
Aunt Edie nodded.
Oh, yes. He was quite the catch. He looked so handsome in a suit, and he could dance beautifully. He beat me, you know.
This time, Jenna's mouth dropped, and she set aside her cookie.
Seriously? Back when I was young, you didn't talk about those things in polite society. Not in my circle, anyway. That sort of thing only happened on the other side of the tracks. Or so people said.
So, you divorced him?
Actually, he divorced me. There was a big scandal, of course. Everyone thought I was a horrible, ungrateful wife.
Ungrateful to leave a man who beat you? Scoffed Jenna.
I hadn't told anyone about that. I couldn't. I was too embarrassed.
So, you let him get away with it? Aunt Edie shrugged.
Things were different back then. Anyway, I just wanted to get out of the marriage and get away. He finally agreed to let me go on one condition.
That you not have him arrested, Jenna guessed.
That I not tell our families why we were divorcing. Of course, this made things difficult because, when I was young, divorce wasn't quite so easy. There was no such thing as no-fault divorce. It was costly, and you had to prove that there was a reason your marriage couldn't work. Adultery, cruelty, rape.
Well, you had him on cruelty.
I could have, but frankly, I was too afraid of what he'd do if I told anyone. So I agreed to come out the bad one. He sent a friend over to deliver some flowers, and then conveniently arrived to catch me in flagrant with the man.
Seriously? And it worked?
Aunt Edie shrugged. Back then, couples created a fiction that their lawyers could present to the judge. That was what he came up with, and I could take it or leave it. So I took it. We both got what we wanted. I got free, and he kept his good reputation.
A fake reputation? Jenna muttered. How could her aunt have let this man get away with that kind of dishonesty?
Aunt Edie, you left him to go on to abuse the next woman he married.
Aunt Edie dropped her gaze.
Yes, I suppose you could say I did, letting him go on record as the injured party. But once I was free of him, I made sure word got out about his violent temper. I told a friend in the utmost confidence and, well, you know how that goes. Suddenly, he wasn't so welcome at parties anymore. No woman in town would have anything to do with him.
What happened to him?
He moved away. He finally married again. I saw the announcement in the paper.
One corner of Aunt Edie's mouth lifted.
He died only a few years into his second marriage. Food poisoning, so the story went. But we all knew the truth. His wife poisoned him, Sometimes I wish I'd had the nerve to do that. But in the end, he got what he deserved. You know what they say. Every dog has his day.
Graham always said that, too. Jenna never had known exactly what it meant, but she'd gotten the gist of it. She hoped a certain dog up in Seattle had his day, and soon.
Anyway, things worked out. Along came my Ralph. I can tell you, everyone wondered what I saw in a rough old fisherman. I told them I saw a kind man with a big smile and a big heart. I saw how he treated his mother and his sisters, and I knew he'd never raise his fist to me. And he didn't. He hardly ever even raised his voice, God bless him.
She reached out and patted Jenna's arm.
That's how I know that things are going to work out fine for you too, dear. You've had your struggles, but remember, every storm brings a rainbow.
You sound like my mom, Jenna said, wiping a tear from the corner of her eye. Aunt Edie grinned.
Who do you think she learned it from?
Oh, Aunt Edie, you're great, Jenna said, and hugged the old woman.
No, I'm just a selfish old woman.
No one would ever accuse you of being selfish, Jenna told her.
I am, dragging you down here, uprooting your daughter. She needed to be uprooted. All so I could keep this place going.
You should keep it going, Jenna said firmly. Why give up on a dream that meant so much?
A lot of people have made wonderful memories here over the years, said Aunt Edie. Ralph and I built the place back in 1962. We made a good life in Moonlight Harbor. I thought you and your daughter could, too.
We can, Jenna said and patted her hand.
I'm afraid the place needs a little work now.
A little? That was like saying the Titanic had a tiny leak.
We'll make it work, Jenna said. It's probably going to cost a bit. Don't you worry about that. I have a little of Ralph's life insurance money left to live on, and my Social Security, and I've got $3,000 in savings in a bank in Quinault that Sherwood Stern here at Harbor First National doesn't know about, Aunt Edie said with a firm nod of the head. And Jenna had $801.52. Couldn't forget that 52 cents. In the hidden account under her mom's name.
Oh, yeah. They were rich.
We may need a little more than that. Maybe you could get a business loan. I did take out a loan. Oh, let me see. I think it was a couple of years ago. Or was it three? I used it to do a few repairs.
Where? Jenna wondered.
I'm afraid I've had a bit of a struggle paying it back.
With nothing but vacancies? What a surprise.
So, no chance of a loan from the bank?
Aunt Edie's mouth drooped.
Probably not.
And here came the tick. Blink, blink.
Well, Jenna said, determined not to spoil her first day by thinking about their lack of funds. I'd better get the trailer unloaded and returned to the trailer rental place. And while you're doing that, I'll put together some clam chowder for our dinner. If you need any help unloading, Pete can help you.
Pete? Had Aunt Edie hired someone?
Pete Long. He's been here a couple of years now. He's my handyman.
Jenna thought of the pathetic fence around the pool, the dangling sign and the slanting steps. What exactly was he handy with?
I let him stay in one of the rooms in exchange for working around the place.
What kind of work does he do? Jenna asked. Aunt Edie shrugged.
Oh, this and that.
In other words, he was a loafer. Well, once she was settled in, Jenna would make sure he moved on down the road and found a new place to loaf and a new little old lady to take advantage of. She hurried to her car under an assault of rain, opened the trailer and pulled out a box, trying not to look in the direction of the derelict pool.
What had she gotten herself into?
She turned, box in hand, and nearly ran into a grizzled old man with a chin full of gray stubble. Tall and thin, with a long face, he looked to be somewhere in his 70s. He wore an old navy pea coat over tattered jeans and a hat on his head that could have been stolen from the Gorton's fisherman. Where had he come from? He looked like he'd popped out of a copy of The Old Man and the Sea. He put his hands on his hips and scowled at her.
Who are you?
Who are you? She countered.
I'm Pete Long. I run this place.
Ah, you're the handyman. Run this place indeed. You work for my aunt. The scowl got darker.
You're the niece nobody's seen in years.
Jenna pushed aside the guilt. That's right. I've come here to help Aunt Edie. She shoved the box into his midsection, making him grunt. She said you'd help me unload my things. He took it grudgingly.
She doesn't need any help here. She's got me.
And just by looking around, I can see what a help you've been, Jenna said sweetly.
We were doing all right, he informed her. But your aunt's glad you're here, so I guess it's okay by me, he said, and walked off toward the house.
So glad you gave your permission, Jenna muttered, and pulled out another box. She followed Pete inside the house and set her box in the front hall. Aunt Edie was standing there now, along with Pete, who seemed in no hurry to make a trip back for more.
I see you two have met, Aunt Edie said, smiling from one to the other.
We have, Pete said, sounding like he'd just been forced to make nice with a cobra.
I know we're all going to be a great team, Aunt Edie gushed.
Yes, as soon as Pete learned there was no I in team. Jenna said nothing, just turned to go out for another box. As she went down the steps, she heard Aunt Edie say to him,
You'll have dinner with us, won't you? I'm making clam chowder.
You know I love your clam chowder, Edie, he said, the gruffness gone from his voice.
Oh, brother, what a suck-up. Not only was he getting a free room from her aunt, he was also getting free food. If this was how Aunt Edie ran things, no wonder she was in trouble. Jenna spent the next 40 minutes hauling in boxes, stowing them in her room and Sabrina's. Sabrina didn't offer to help, and Jenna didn't ask. Better to let her daughter sit in the window seat like a sphinx until she calmed down, which would hopefully happen sometime in Jenna's lifetime. She stowed her bike and massage table in Aunt Edie's garage, next to yet another gas-guzzling car left over from an era before she'd been born, then went to the trailer rental place next to the gas station and returned the trailer. The semi-supermarket was right across the street, so she dropped in and picked up a bottle of white wine to contribute to dinner and a bottle of root beer for the unhappy one, and a giant chocolate bar for herself.
All the right food groups, the checker said to her with a smile. Enjoy.
The store might not have been huge, but what it lacked in size, it obviously made up for in friendliness. Since there was a red box right outside, Jenna also found a movie she thought Sabrina would enjoy. Ice cream, root beer, movies. What else could she bribe her daughter with? A promise to buy out every shop in town the following day? Right, because she had money to burn. She was made of money. She was frowning when she walked back to her car. Her mother called as she was pulling into the motel parking lot.
I wanted to see if you made it there safely, Mel said.
We did. Jenna wished she had more to say, something positive. Nothing came to mind.
How's Aunt Edie?
Now, there was something positive. She's as sweet as ever, but she's got quite a past. Did you know about it?
I did.
How come you never told me?
I never thought to. Ancient history, dear. I mean, you don't want to be defined by your past mistakes, do you?
Good point. And I've got to admit, hearing about how she restarted her life gives me hope that I can, too.
Of course you can, said Mel. That's what we do when things take a turn for the worse. We move in a new direction.
Is there any woman in our family who isn't a superhero?
We're all made of pretty sturdy cloth, Mel said. Speaking of sturdy cloth, how does my darling granddaughter like Moonlight Harbor?
Well, the ice cream parlor was a hit. Nora Singleton's still there dishing up the calories.
Good old Nora. She's a treasure.
Yes, she is. And stopping there got me points. Plus, we saw a deer and its fawn, which Sabrina thought was really cool. But then we hit Aunt Edie's.
Ugh, Mom, the place is a disaster. I don't blame Sabrina for being mad. And let me tell you, she was. She let me have it. Naturally, Aunt Edie had to overhear.
I'm sorry, but it's only your first day. Things will get better, Mel predicted.
I hope you're right. By the way, there's some old guy hanging around here who's supposed to be her handyman. He's about as useful as a tanning bed in a desert.
Maybe there's a shortage of handymen down there, Mel said.
Maybe. He's invited to dinner tonight.
A regular dinner party.
Yes, wouldn't that be fun? Her, Aunt Edie, the grumpy handyman, and her discontented daughter. She could hardly wait. She ended the call and went inside, delivering the wine to the kitchen, where Aunt Edie was busy stirring a big pot of chowder. The aroma of garlic bread danced over from the oven to greet Jenna.
It sure smells good in here, she told her aunt as she pulled the bottle from the bag.
Let's hope everything will taste as good as it smells, said Aunt Edie.
She caught sight of the wine.
Oh, aren't you a sweetie?
You can't show up to dinner without bringing something, Jenna said.
You can when you're family, Aunt Edie smiled at her. I can't begin to tell you how happy I am that you're here.
It's good to be with you again, Jenna said. That much she could truthfully say, and she would have been ecstatic to be there in spite of the motel's run-down condition if only her daughter wasn't so unhappy.
I'm glad you had a chance to meet Pete, Aunt Edie continued.
Yes, Pete.
What exactly does he do around here? Jenna asked.
Oh, he just helps keep things shipshape, Aunt Edie replied vaguely.
But what specifically does he do?
Aunt Edie became very focused on stirring her clam chowder.
He repairs things.
He hasn't repaired your sign.
He'll get to it, Aunt Edie said.
Sometime this decade?
So, how did you come to hire him?
Well, we met quite by accident. I'd stepped over to the seafood shack for some popcorn shrimp, and he was there drinking coffee. He was new in town and retired. It turned out he was looking for a room to rent, and I told him since I had some rooms free at the motel, he was welcome to stay in one. That was when he suggested we do some good old-fashioned bartering.
Obviously, Pete had gotten the good end of that deal.
That seems like only yesterday. But then so do those days when you were a little girl. My, how the time does fly by after 70, Aunt Edie mused. She set down her spoon. I think our dinner is just about ready. Why don't you fetch Sabrina, and I'll go find Pete?
Jenna almost suggested Aunt Edie fetch Sabrina and let her go find Pete. She didn't much like the guy, but she'd rather deal with him than her angry daughter. But she went up to the blue bedroom, resigned to more unpleasantness. The door was now shut, a sure sign that she was still poopy mom. She steeled herself and knocked on it.
Go away, came the muffled response.
She opened the door and poked her head inside. It's time for dinner. Sabrina was sitting on the bed, her knees pulled up, glaring out the window at the view.
I'm not hungry.
You will be later if you don't eat. And this isn't a restaurant where you can get a meal whenever you want, so you need to come down. Sabrina transferred the glare to her mom.
I don't want to.
Decision time. What to do? Wimp out and let her daughter have her way, or insist she be polite and come down and eat? Maybe letting her stay in her room and sulk wasn't such a bad idea. Sabrina loved her food too much to maintain a hunger strike for long. Jenna should let her suffer the consequences of her decision.
Okay, she said. If you're not hungry, you're not hungry. But there will be no more opportunities to eat after this, and it's a long time until breakfast.
Sabrina shrugged and returned her attention to the view out the window.
And I brought home a movie, Jenna added.
She probably doesn't even have a DVD player, Sabrina said in disgust.
Maybe Aunt Edie didn't.
Suit yourself, Jenna said, and shut the door. She went back downstairs and stopped in the living room again. The TV looked fairly new, but it appeared that Sabrina was right. There was no DVD player. There was an old VCR, though. Wow, special. So it looked like there would be no visits to Redbox anytime in the near future. Jenna went on into the kitchen to find that her aunt had emptied the grocery bag. The root beer was gone, along with the wine, probably both in the fridge, and the candy and movie were on the counter.
"I'm afraid I don't have one of those machines for playing that," Aunt Edie said, nodding to it.
"That's okay," Jenna said. "We can find plenty of other things to do."
"Well, I do have cable, and that's a smart TV, so we can always stream something."
Aunt Edie even knew what streaming was? Jenna's surprise must have showed on her face because her great-aunt chuckled, then said,
"I'm 82, dear, not dead. I've got a smartphone and an e-reader and an iPod where I listen to Adele and Lady Gugu."
Jenna smiled at that. "You mean Lady Gaga?"
"Yes, her. I think she's very talented, and I always appreciate creativity."
Pete opened the kitchen door, stamping his feet on the mat, and then stepped into the kitchen and brushed the rain off his coat.
"It's coming down like crazy out there," he announced in case no one had looked out the window or just been out in the squall. "Supposed to get some 60-mile-an-hour winds tonight. Make sure you batten down the hatches."
Batten down the hatches? Had Pete been a sailor? Maybe he was just a sailor wannabe. Who knew? He removed his hat, showing wisps of hair over a shiny pink scalp, and walked over to the table, took off his wet coat and hung it over a chair, letting it drip on the floor. No, Pete couldn't have been a sailor. He'd been born in a barn. Aunt Edie was now struggling to pour the contents of the pot into a soup tureen.
"Let me do that," Jenna said, and jumped to the rescue. "Oh, thank you, dear. I'm not used to having help."
"Well, you have help now," Jenna told her.
"You've had help all along," Pete muttered.
"Where's Sabrina?" Aunt Edie asked, looking around the kitchen as if expecting her to pop out from under the table.
"She's not hungry," Jenna said.
"She has to eat," protested Aunt Edie.
"She will, but not until breakfast."
"Hunger strike, huh?" Pete guessed. "In my day, kids did what they were told. If you said come to supper, they came to supper."
And who had asked him?
"Oh, do you have kids, Pete?"
"Nope, never had any."
Jenna nodded.
"Ah,
a real expert." Suddenly, to Jenna's surprise, her daughter appeared in the doorway, looking sheepish.
"I guess I'll eat something," she said.
Jenna nodded.
"I'm so glad," said Aunt Edie. "I know you'll love my clam chowder."
"I've never had clam chowder," Sabrina said.
Aunt Edie looked at her in shock.
"Never had clam chowder? Oh my, we definitely have to rectify that situation."
She pulled on an oven mitt and took out a loaf of foil-encased French bread.
"Chowder and garlic bread, the perfect meal for a stormy day."
Once the food was on the table and everyone was seated, Aunt Edie smiled at Pete.
"Pete, would you offer up the blessing?"
Pete didn't look all that happy to be put in charge of blessing the food, but he grunted and shut his eyes, and Jenna followed suit.
"Thanks, God. Keep us going."
And that was it.
"Let's eat," he said, and rubbed his hands together.
Conversation didn't exactly flow at dinner. Roger, freed from his cage, sat on his kitchen perch and chattered, reminding everyone what a pretty bird he was. Aunt Edie chatted about the joys of digging clams and how the chowder was her own top-secret recipe. Then she volunteered Pete to take Sabrina clam digging. But since Sabrina had made a face with her first taste of chowder, he didn't appear too enthused at the prospect.
"The kid doesn't even like clams."
"No matter," Aunt Edie said easily. "It's still fun to dig them, and clams are an acquired taste," she said to Sabrina. "Would you like something else? A grilled cheese sandwich, perhaps?"
"Oh, you don't have to go to all that trouble," Jenna said, and earned a scowl from her daughter.
"It's no trouble," Aunt Edie assured her. "Your mother always loved grilled cheese sandwiches when she was a girl," she told Sabrina.
No way was Jenna going to let her aunt wait on them hand and foot.
"I'll do it," she said, getting up. "You stay where you are."
Roger put in an order, too. Gimme whiskey! Gimme whiskey!
He was more talkative than Sabrina, who concentrated on looking at her plate and eating her sandwich.
You don't say much, do you? Pete said to her.
She bit her lip and shook her head. Then a moment later, she asked to be excused. Yes, you may, Jenna said, resigned to letting her go back to her pout. Their first meal in their new home hadn't exactly been a success.
Not a very friendly kid, Pete observed.
She's unhappy, said Aunt Edie. The poor child has been through a lot.
Was she abused? Pete asked.
No, Jenna said, horrified.
Beat up at school?
No.
Has she got some disease?
No,
Jenna said, exasperated.
Then what's her problem?
You.
If you must know, her father and I are divorced. She didn't want to move so far away from him, and she had to leave behind all her friends.
Yeah, well, that's nothing. My mom went through two husbands after my dad died, and they both beat me. Had to fight in Nam and saw my best buddy die before my eyes. Life is tough.
Well, thank you for those encouraging words, Jenna said. Her sarcasm was lost on Pete.
She'll be okay once she settles in, he added. Just don't baby her.
This sage advice from the man who never had kids.
Well, said Aunt Edie with forced cheer, what would you like to do after dinner, dear? We could play some anagrams.
Another game Jenna had loved as a kid. Aunt Edie had an old trunk in the dining room where she kept her collection of games, including an old Folgers coffee can filled with small cardboard squares, each with a letter of the alphabet on it. They would draw letters from that can and take turns making words, adding letters to existing words to make them bigger and steal back and forth. But tonight, Jenna was too pooped for that much brain work.
How about tomorrow night, she said. If you don't mind, I'll just go flop on my bed and read for a while. Oh, of course. You must be exhausted, said Aunt Edie. What was I thinking?
You were thinking of me, Jenna said, and reached over and laid a hand on her arm.
Thank you.
After dinner, she left Aunt Edie and Pete to play anagrams without her and went upstairs to her bedroom. She looked in on Sabrina, who was back to employing the silent treatment, kissed the top of her head, and told her she loved her. Then she went to her own room, where the dolls were waiting, and unpacked the Muriel Sterling book Mom had given her. New beginnings. Well, that was appropriate for sure. She opened to the first page and read the chapter title. Death in Winter, Growth in Spring. A garden is God's constant reminder to us that we live in a world of change, a world of birth, death, and rebirth. What happens to us is often exactly like what happens in our gardens. Winter comes, and the garden dies. Cheery, Jenna frowned but read on. But in reality, it's not dead. It's merely dormant, waiting for the warmth of a new spring to bring back to life those perennials we so enjoyed the year before. It's often the same with our lives. We plan for certain things and hope for positive outcomes, dream big dreams, only to see our plans crumble and our dreams die. Jenna couldn't help but feel as though the woman had written this just for her. Was Muriel Sterling psychic? You may be mourning the death of a dream, but you don't have to mourn without hope. Like a flower in winter experiencing a period of dormancy, use this time to heal and gather strength for spring when a new dream will crop up. Jenna hoped she could heal here at the ocean's edge. She read on, the book growing heavy in her hands, and soon her eyelids had fallen shut. Next thing she knew, she was out in the ocean, paddling around desperately in the icy cold water, waves crashing over her and pushing her under. In the distance, she could see a fishing boat chugging away. There, in the stern, stood Damien and Sabrina. He had his arm around Sabrina's shoulders and was waving goodbye to Jenna.
I told you I didn't want to stay, Sabrina called. Come back, Jenna cried. Somebody help me.
Oh, hallelujah, here came rescue. Pete, in a little dinghy. He stood up, a life preserver in his hand, and threw it to her. She reached out and caught it, only to discover it was made of cement. She awoke with a gurgle and a cough, her heart pounding as furiously as the waves on the beach. The rain was beating against her window. Great. Welcome to Moonlight Harbor. Chapter 5. To do. Attend church. Check out town with Sabrina. Assess what needs to be done to get Driftwood Inn up and running. Take deep breaths. Sunday morning brought blue skies and sunshine, and Jenna decided to take that as a good sign. Church on Sunday was a habit her mother had cultivated in both her and her sister, and while Celeste had drifted off toward Sunday morning sleep-ins, Jenna had kept it up. Back home, she and Sabrina had attended a small church with a large kid population. It was where Sabrina had first met her friend Marigold. Jenna had high hopes that maybe another good friend would be waiting at a church here at their new home. She donned a sundress and sweater, then slipped into Sabrina's bedroom and woke her with a kiss. "Time to get up, sleepyhead." Sabrina groaned and pulled the covers over her head. "I smell breakfast," Jenna told her. "I bet Aunt Edie's making cinnamon rolls." No sound from under the covers. "Come on, baby girl. It's Sunday, church day."
"I don't want to go to church," said the muffled voice.
"Staying home isn't an option," Jenna said firmly. She pulled the covers back and gave her daughter another kiss. "Come on, breakfast and church, and then we can check out the town and do some shopping." Shopping, the magic word. Sabrina sat up and pushed the hair out of her eyes. She was frowning, but at least she was upright. "See you downstairs in 20 minutes, Jenna said, and exited before any whining could commence. As she went downstairs, the aroma of freshly baked rolls, sausage, and coffee greeted her. It was a treat to have someone cook breakfast for her, but she hoped Aunt Edie wasn't going to make a habit of it. She'd feel guilty having the old woman waiting on her all the time. Her aunt was up and ready for the day, wearing coral-colored slacks and a sweatshirt, pink slippers on her feet. Roger was out of his cage and on his kitchen perch, keeping her company. She smiled at Jenna as she walked into the kitchen.
"There you are. How did you sleep?"
"Until her dream?" "Great," Jenna lied.
"There's nothing like the sound of the waves to lull you to sleep," Aunt Edie said.
"And nothing like worry to wake you up." She studied Jenna.
"You look tired, dear."
"I'm fine, and I'll be great once I have one of your cinnamon rolls," Jenna said, pointing to the plate in her aunt's hand.
"You always did love them," Aunt Edie said, placing it on the table. "Sit down, eat. I've got sausage and scrambled eggs coming, too."
The table was set for two, with orange juice already poured. "Aren't you eating?" Jenna asked as she slipped onto a seat.
"Oh, no, I was up ages ago, but I will join you for a cup of coffee."
With Jenna's breakfast dished up, her aunt sat down, too.
"What would you like to do today?"
"Well, first of all, I'm going to find a church." Aunt Edie nodded.
"There are plenty here. I don't go anymore. Too much trouble and too many hypocrites."
Jenna wasn't sure what to say to that.
"Or maybe just people trying to get their act together."
"Maybe," Aunt Edie said with a shrug. "Anyway, the music's too loud. All those drums and guitars. In my day, you had an organist."
"I guess times have changed," Jenna said.
"And not for the better."
Aunt Edie pursed her lips in disapproval. Then changing times were forgotten as she returned to the subject of Jenna's itinerary.
"And after church?"
"I thought it would be good to show Sabrina around." Aunt Edie nodded her approval.
"Excellent idea. Be sure to take her to the kite store. You loved to fly kites when you were a girl."
Sabrina chose that moment to make her entrance, wearing her favorite white cold-shoulder dress and sandals.
"Don't you look adorable," gushed Aunt Edie. "My, oh my, fashions for girls are so cute.
Makes me wish I was young again.
My, oh my, echoed Roger. My, oh my, wish I was young.
Aunt Edie proceeded to fuss over Sabrina, making sure she not only had sausage and eggs, but seconds on cinnamon rolls, and Jenna was pleased to see a smile finally surface on her daughter's face. She was even more pleased when Sabrina complimented Aunt Edie on her cinnamon rolls.
They're one of my specialties, Aunt Edie said. If you like, I'll teach you how to make them. And oatmeal muffins.
That sounds good, Sabrina said, and Jenna took hope that maybe this would all turn out. Until they got to Moonlight Harbor Evangelical Church. Not that she didn't get a friendly greeting from several people, and not that the pastor's sermon was boring, at least not to most of the single women in the congregation. He was a cutie, maybe mid-30s, with sun-bleached hair and blue eyes and the face of an angel. No wedding ring, which made her wonder whether the women were giving their rapt attention to the sermon or the man. The kids were another story. A boy came up and said hi to Sabrina almost as soon as they walked in the door, but the same two girls from the ice cream parlor were hanging around in the church foyer, and they both glared in Sabrina's direction, which left her frowning through the entire service. Afterward, the older woman who'd been sitting in the row in back of them tapped Jenna on the shoulder and asked her if she was new in town. She was a beautiful woman, probably somewhere in her 70s, with snow-white hair and delicate features. She wore white slacks and a matching jacket over a mint-green top, and had accented her outfit with a printed scarf in shades of pastel orange and green.
I am, Jenna said. I've come to live with my aunt.
With Edie Patterson? You must be Jenna.
I am.
I'm Patricia Whiteside. I own the Oyster Inn.
The Oyster Inn? I can't tell you how special it was to eat in your dining room when I was a girl.
Jenna introduced Sabrina, who was fidgeting and anxious to escape.
I've told my daughter about how I had my first ever crab cocktail in your dining room.
You bring her to see us, and I'll give you both a crab cocktail on the house, Patricia said.
All right, a crab cocktail on the house, Jenna said to Sabrina as soon as Patricia had turned to talk to someone else.
Cool. Can we go now?
It looked like they were leaving now. They started for the door, but two more people waylaid Jenna on the way. Sabrina didn't stick around to meet anyone else. Jenna was about to chase her when a 40-something black woman with dreadlocks, gorgeous big eyes, and an impressive bust line stopped her. The woman wore a long top and flowing crocheted sweater over white leggings and sandals.
Are you Jenna? She asked.
Jenna nodded, and the woman said,
We've all been looking forward to meeting you. You're all Edie has talked about for the last 3 weeks. I'm Tyrella Lamb. I own Beach Lumber and Hardware here in town. I suspect I'll be seeing a lot of you.
I suspect you will, Jenna agreed.
I hope you're not too discouraged after seeing the place. Edie was afraid you'd take one look at it and turn tail and run.
At this point, Jenna wasn't sure where she'd run.
I'm here to stay, she said as much to herself as to Tyrella.
Good, because your aunt really needs you, and that place of hers may look like a wreck now, but the bones are good, and it's still got life left in it. You know my husband Leroy and I stayed there when we first came to town to check into buying the hardware store. It was awfully cute back then, and Edie was so welcoming.
No surprise there, Jenna said. My aunt definitely has the gift of hospitality.
Yes, she does. She always baked cookies for her guests and had them available in the lobby. Staying at the Driftwood Inn gave us a very good first impression of the town. 20 years ago, there were only two choices for where to stay, the Driftwood or the Oyster Inn. Both did a very good business.
I hope we can do a good business again, Jenna said.
You will, Tyrella assured her. I'll help you when you're ready, and if you need a listening ear, I'm pretty good at that, too.
Jenna thanked her, then made her way through the crowd of chatting people and back to the car where Sabrina sat scowling out the window.
I hate that church, she said, not mincing words.
I thought the music was really good, Jenna offered.
The kids are mean. Honey, this was only our first visit. You have to give it a chance.